Sir Henry Curtis here, welcoming you to another No Plan, No Script, No Bullshoney podcast. Swallow the red pill, put on the sunglasses, and prepare to see this particular physical world as it truly is, instead of the false view those running this world are projecting into your eyes and brain. Hey kids, this is Sir Henry Curtis with the No Script, No Plan, No Bullshoney podcast. Today I'm going to start off by reciting a poem by Mr. John Kay. We'll call you when you're 6 years old and drag you to the factory to drain your brain for 18 years with promise of security. And then you're free, and 40 years you'll waste to chase a dollar sign so you can die in Florida at the pleasant age of 69. The water's getting hard to drink. We've mangled up the countryside. The air will choke you when you breathe. We're all committing suicide, but it's all right. Let's promise to all keep pushing till our bodies rot. We'll strip the earth of all its green and divide her into parking lots. But there's nothing you and I can do. You and I, we're only two. What's right and wrong, it's all the same. Forget about it for today. We'll stick our heads into the sand, just pretend that all is grand, and hope that everything turns out okay. You're free to speak your mind, my friend, as long as you agree with me. Don't criticize the fatherland or those who shape your destiny, because if you do, you'll lose your job, your mind, and all the friends you knew. We'll send out all our boys in blue. They'll find a way to silence you. But there's nothing you and I can do. You and I, we're only two. What's right and wrong? It's all the same. Forget about it for today. Let's just stick our heads into the sand and just pretend that all is grand and hope that everything turns out okay. So it's election season, and I have a question for you. It's election season in the States. It's election season in Canada, too. So, here's a little lighter something. Guy walks into a bar, sees that the bartender's a robot, so he orders a drink. The drink's perfect. And the robot asks the man, "What's your IQ?" The man says 150, and the robot proceeds to discuss environmental and world affairs, quantum mechanics, all kinds of interesting things. The man's really impressed with this, so he goes outside, turns around, walks back into the bar to see if the robot knows the difference. The man orders a drink, which again is perfect, and the robot asks the man what his IQ is. The man says 100, and the robot proceeds to talk about hockey, women, and beer. Still amazed, the man decides to try it another time, so he goes back outside and repeats the same routine. The robot pours him a perfect drink and asks the man what his IQ is. 50, says the man. In a slow, deliberate voice, the robot asks, "So are you going to bother voting again?" Now, I ask that because I'm curious if you're going to bother voting. It is the voting season. People put signs on their lawns. People go to conventions. People sign up. They write letters to their editor. They do call into the radio shows. They do all kinds of things on social media. I'm sure there are lots of political podcasts. People wander around, especially in North America, looking for things to become offended about so they can get all enraged, which is another topic for another day. However, I have to ask, especially Americans, why do you bother voting? 2008 proved that, as John Kay said in another song in 1969, your vote is a meaningless joke. Oh, you don't believe me? You really think your vote counts? Well, I got a couple of facts for you. There's a company, I don't know how to pronounce the name, it looks like Diebold, D-I-E-B-O-L-D. Maybe it's Diebold, I have no idea. They make your voting machines. You vote with machines. In Canada, they still use paper ballots, and they're counted by humans. Makes it difficult to cheat, although not impossible. The Diebold voting machines, however, are proven to have a back door. Your vote is meaningless. As the late dictator Joseph Stalin is quoted to have said, supposedly, who votes doesn't matter. Only who counts the votes matters. If your votes in a voting machine are subject to backdoor infiltration, then why do you bother voting? There's another reason, though, why I have to ask, why do you think your vote is not a meaningless joke? And that is 2008. In 2008, I hope some of you remember, there was a serious fiscal crisis. And during that crisis, we were told by the establishment-owned corporate media that certain banks were too big to fail. The same banks that caused this crisis, by the way, were too big to fail. And so taxpayer money had to be given to those banks to keep them alive, to keep them afloat. Now, all that money went to, well, let me see, I'm getting ahead of myself. First off, it's very clear, statistics have shown this, and there are all kinds of information, which if you want to research, you can find that 80% of the calls to Congress and letters, cards, texts, email, whatever, that went to the Congress critters, your supposed elected representatives, 80% of those were against bailing out the big banks. 80%, which is, that's typically with Pareto and his 80-20 split. So did the Congress critters listen to the will of the 80%? No. No, they bailed out those big banks that were too big to fail. Seems ridiculous, doesn't it? Why do you elect Congress critters if they don't do what you want? Because your vote's a meaningless joke. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter who you vote for. You're voting for Council on Foreign Relations Team A or Council on Foreign Relations Team B. All of those people you're voting for have been vetted by an unelected body called the Council on Foreign Relations. Look this up. That is why people like Ross Perot and Donald Trump will never become president. They're not vetted by the establishment. Only establishment people who have been vetted, and by vetted I mean inspected and approved, who will take orders. The late comedian Bill Hicks had a very interesting viewpoint on this. He realized this long ago. He's been dead, boy, a long time, I think 20 years maybe. Anyways, Bill Hicks said he thought that on the first day of being president, whoever the new president was, ushered into a room and shown a video from an angle that none of us have ever seen of the John Kennedy assassination, and told, this is what will happen to you if you don't listen to us. I mean, that was pretty obvious it happened to Ronald Reagan. He was elected on a small government platform. We're going to lower taxes. We're going to make government small, blah, 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 blah. And yet he was forced to pick a former CIA boss as his vice president. And when he made all that noise about small government and lowering taxes and everything else, he was walking down the street, and suddenly his Secret Service detail deserted him. And he was shot, allegedly by a young crazy guy. Except that if you study the angles from which he was supposedly shot, that young crazy guy could not have possibly hit him. He was shot by somebody else, and not with a bullet. He was shot with something else. The doctors who initially examined him could not find any entrance wound, which I thought was kind of interesting. Eventually they did. It was all covered up. Once Reagan got healthy, he refused to veto any spending bills. He signed them all, every single one. Mr. Small Government. Oh yeah, sure, he lowered taxes. And he also spent money like a drunken sailor. The national debt and the deficit both grew astronomically under Reagan's watch, supposed watch. it's not his watch, really. We've already established it's the Council on Foreign Relations watch. It's the establishment. So, Americans, your vote is negated by backdoors in voting machines and also by the fact that your elected Congress critters refuse to do what you ask of them. There's a third reason, though, and this is possibly the most frightening and also the least discussed. That is, your country's bankrupt, completely bankrupt. We talk about a deficit, which very few people know what it is. That's your yearly or annually or monthly, depending on the time period you pick, amount over which you've gone over your budget. The amount that you've spent that's greater than the amount you've brought in. Now, of course, you're all told to pay your fair share. The thing is, you're part of an empire, and empires cost money. The only thing propping up your empire right now are investors who continue to lend it money for reasons unbeknownst to those capable of doing math. The Chinese stopped doing it years ago. Instead, they're cashing their T-bills out as they mature. When the Japanese tried to do the same, they were suddenly hit with a massive tsunami. And yes, that's definitely a coincidence. Definitely a coincidence. There's no way that a tsunami could be generated by, I mean, you have to be a total whack job conspiracy theorist to think that American military controls tsunamis or lets nuclear explosions go off in the middle of the ocean to start that kind of stuff, or they control the weather or anything like that. You'd have to be a lunatic. It's simply coincidence. Lots of retired federal workers are going to be very disappointed when the lending and the borrowing stops. Plus, you're paying to wage war on all kinds of third world goat herders who happen to live in oil-rich lands or areas in which a few people want to build gas pipelines. Can anyone say Kandahar? Yes, Americans, you are now the Romans, evil, violent bullies of the world, becoming more violent as your empire crumbles. Your empire costs a lot of money, so pay up, whether or not you agree. Do you want to know how to change this? Well, I can give you my platform if I were going to run for president. Not that I am. The whole idea is ridiculous. The very first thing you have to do is get rid of the Federal Reserve. No printing of money, no expanding the money supply, no inflation. No anti-business regulations. Laws must conform to the Austrian school of economics, not the Keynesian school of economics. That's the people and the mentality and philosophy that has caused the business cycle and all this boom bust and depressions and recessions and everything else. It's totally unnecessary, and it's only because the only economics that's taught is Keynesian. That means John Maynard Keynes. He helped invent the income tax with Milton Friedman. Nice people. And if I believed in hell, then I would volunteer to spend an 8-hour shift turning them on a spit. Anyways, back to my non-existent presidential campaign platform. Gold standard. Gotta have a gold standard. No fractional reserve banking. No income, capital gains, death, or inheritance taxes. We're not going to punish people for being productive. Money to pay for government is raised by a 10% national sales tax on everything and lotteries. People are going to gamble anyways. Government might as well be the one that makes the money. And by government, I mean the people. I don't mean the establishment the way it is now. No permanent welfare or unemployment insurance. Time-limited assistance to help those in distress get back to work. No alphabet soups. No IRS, no DEA, no ATF, no FBI, no CIA, no EPA, no FDA, no TSA, no Freddie Mac, no Fannie Mae. Nothing. You don't need them. If you think about it, all they do is screw stuff up, make it worse. I agree totally with Ringo Starr, who said everything government touches turns to crap. He actually used another word, however, I don't want the explicit rating. No gun control laws, no licensing, registration, nothing. Anybody can own any kind of weapon they want except nuclear because storing the fuel infringes on neighbors. You cannot stop criminals from having weapons, so you might as well let law-abiding people defend themselves. To do otherwise is insane and is proven by places like Mexico and Jamaica, where law-abiding firearm ownership is totally banned, and yet you're more likely to be shot there than anywhere else. Bring all of American servicemen and women home, no military bases outside of the country, self-defense military only, just like Switzerland. No peacekeeping missions, no police actions. Sell the aircraft carriers to the highest bidder to be turned into floating resorts. Anybody who wants to vote has to enlist in military or some kind of civil service, preferably immediately after high school when they're young. No exceptions, no medical deferments. We'll take people in wheelchairs. We don't care. You leave your United Nations to the third world criminals who've taken it over. And most importantly, stay the hell out of other countries' business. If you'd like to have an idea about why America is such a bully empire, watch a terrific documentary called Why We Fight. Now, if you live in America, you're going to have to find a bootleg copy or use some other method of getting it because it's banned in the land of the free. Can't watch it. All across the world on YouTube, you can watch it. Not there. The one place where it counts. They don't want you to know why you're such a bunch of warmongering bullies. After that, you got to watch Thrive. It's a terrific documentary. It explains all kinds of stuff. It's done very professionally by Foster Gamble of the Procter & Gamble dynasty. I don't know how he even stayed in the family making this. He names the 12 families who control the world, and I truly mean the 12 families who control the world. He talks about all kinds of stuff that I've mentioned, you know, Royal Rife and why cures for cancer are never allowed and all kinds of stuff like that. Terrific documentary. That one, as far as I know, is still watchable in America. It's called Thrive. Terrific documentary. You know, I'm really sorry to see the American empire go. Not that I want the empire. It's the whole idea of one man, one vote, that kind of stuff. I mean, when that stuff came out 200 and something years ago, most countries were still worshiping bloodlines like characters in Game of Thrones. There is no religious freedom. All that kind of stuff. Those were really off-the-wall concepts back then. So I don't really want to see America crumble. Unfortunately, it is a reality that it's crumbling. So I'm going to end this with another little story that's a little happier than my poem that I, not my poem, John Kay's poem. So a new president gets elected, and unfortunately, he dies. He was thrown from his horse while vacationing on a ranch. He landed on a rattlesnake, and the rattlesnake, ignoring professional courtesy, bit the president. And the president died because the emergency room at the nearest hospital was too understaffed to treat him. So upon arrival in heaven, he was met by St. Peter at the pearly gates. "Welcome to heaven," says St. Peter. "Before you settle in, it seems there's a problem. We seldom see a politician around these parts. We're not sure what to do with you." "No problem. Just let me in. I'm a believer," said the president. "I'd like to let you in, but I have orders from the boss himself," St. Peter said. "He said you have to spend one day in hell and one day in heaven. After that, you have to choose where you live for eternity." "But I've already made up my mind. I want to be in heaven," replied the president. "I'm sorry. We have our rules." And with that, St. Peter escorted him to an elevator where he went down, 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 all the way to hell. The doors opened, and he found himself in the middle of a lush golf course. The sun was shining in a cloudless sky, the temperature a perfect 72 degrees. In the distance was a beautiful clubhouse. Standing in front of him was his dad and thousands of other politicians and backroom boys who'd helped him out over the years. Everybody was there, laughing, happy, casual, expensively dressed. They ran to greet him, hug him, and reminisce about the good times they had getting rich at expense of those suckers and peasants who'd elected them. They played a friendly game of golf and then dined on lobster and caviar. The devil himself came up to the president with a frosty drink. "Have a margarita and relax," he said. I can't drink. I took a pledge," said the president. "Hey, this is hell, son," said the devil. "You can drink and eat all you want, not worry. It just gets better from there." So the president took a drink and found himself liking the devil, who he thought was a really friendly guy like himself, telling funny jokes, pulling hilarious, nasty pranks, kind of like the pranks that the president had pulled on voters. They had such a great time that before he realized it was time to go, everybody gave him a big hug and waved as the president stepped on the elevator and headed upward. When the elevator door opened, he was in heaven again, with St. Peter waiting for him. "Now it's time to visit heaven." Opening the gate. So for 24 hours, the president was made to hang out with a bunch of honest, good-natured people who enjoyed each other's company, talked about things other than money, and treated each other decently. No nasty pranks, no frat boy jokes, no fancy country clubs, and while the food tasted great, it wasn't caviar or lobster. The people were all poor. He didn't see anyone he knew, and he wasn't even treated like someone special. Worst of all, to the president, Jesus turned out to be some kind of Jewish hippie with all his endless peace and do unto others jive. "Whoa," he thought uncomfortably to himself. "I was never prepared for this." The day done, St. Peter returned and said, "Well, you've spent a day in hell and a day in heaven, Mr. President. Now choose where you want to live for eternity." And with the Jeopardy theme playing softly in the background, the president reflected for a moment and then answered, "Well, I never would have thought I'd say this. I mean, heaven's been delightful and all, but I really think I belong in hell with my friends." So St. Peter escorted him to the elevator, and down, down, down he went, all the way to hell. The doors of the elevator opened, and he was in the middle of a barren, scorched earth, covered with garbage and toxic industrial waste. Kind of like, well, I won't say the name of the town. I'm sure you get the idea. He was horrified to see all of his friends dressed in rags and chained together, picking up the trash and putting it in black bags. They were groaning and moaning in pain, faces and hands black with grime. The devil came over to the president, and he put an arm around his shoulder. "I don't understand," stammered the shocked president. "Yesterday there was a golf course and a clubhouse, and we ate lobster and caviar and drank booze. We screwed around and had a great time. Now there's just a wasteland full of garbage, and everybody looks miserable." The devil looked at him, smiled slyly, and purred, "Yesterday we were campaigning. Today you voted for us." This is Sir Henry Curtis. Good day, and may your Schwartz go with you. Thanks for listening to the No Plan, No Script, No Bullshoney podcast. This is Sir Henry Curtis signing off until our next time together. May your Schwartz go with you.